Okay, so then yesterday we were going through the introduction, these 5 points that are being given. I think we only made it through 2 or 3 of them. So I'll read all 5, then we'll go review. The essential substance of the mind is the mode of goodness, which is the energy of Lord Aniruddha, who is the localized supersoul feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 2. When that sattvika mental substance is dedicated to the Lord, it is transformed to Krishna consciousness, the state of infallible goodness above the 3 material modes of nature. 3. To dedicate the mind to the Lord, we must channel the flow of our desires towards His lotus feet. Hence, there is no question of controlling the mind, fixing the mind, pacifying the mind, without the reformation of desire. Our quality of mind is subject to the quality of our desire. 4. From the logic of the above point 2, it is clear that the original condition of the mind is Krishna consciousness. That original condition is contaminated as soon as our desire flows towards the Lord over matter. And 5. Thus, what we know to be the material mind is in essence the condition of material attraction. So, this then is going to be, he's saying this is the basis of the whole book, these points that are coming from these quotes from Srila Prabhupada. Then the discussion will expand out. So now, at this point still, even though it's subtle, we're looking at the philosophy. The whole thing actually is always going to be philosophy. But in here, then, it's more, the emphasis is on the Krishna conscious element. Right, so the technicality of the working of the mind is yet to be brought out, right? So that it becomes clear that we're dealing with this psychological, like, analyzation here. So we've established the mind's in the mode of goodness. So therefore, it needs to be connected with the Lord of the mode of goodness, or Aniruddha. Then it is actually peaceful. So in here, you're getting this, how you say? So that makes very good sense. Now, what is in between these two, that's what's coming up. Now, you're going to have the Lord, then you're going, it means you have the mind and the Lord is there. But now what's in between is the sense objects. Right? And thus the desire for an attachment to them. Right? This is what gets in the way that we don't see Aniruddha, we don't see the Lord. Right? Does this make sense? Because the whole problem is that the problem is not the mind and the senses. Right? It's not, and it's very obvious that Krishna consciousness and being connected to the Lord is what we're trying to do. But the problem is that we, being attached to the senses and the sense objects separate from the Lord, then we make this different, we come to this different conclusion that I am the controller and enjoyer. And that's actually what separates us. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so then, yeah. So we've established here that the mind is real, the senses are real. Right? Because otherwise there's this idea that they're illusory, as we mentioned, is that those in the Vivartavad, they will say that it's just an illusion. It doesn't exist. So you get rid of the illusion and then you're liberated, meaning that there's nothing. Right? Well, we say it's Parinamavad. It is a transformation. Right? Means that what is there is real, but our consciousness of it or its manifestation is a transformation of something previous to it. Right? And so the illusion is thinking that it is separate from its transformation. Right? The material world is expanding from Krishna. Right? Krishna manifests, expands, or transforms as Shiva. So the illusion is to think that that transformation is something separate from Krishna. Right? This is the problem. Because we think the material world exists on its own, is its own separate entity, that we can be here and enjoy it and do with it as we like. And then it's a problem, so therefore, why is there this problem? Therefore, we try to take up Krishna consciousness to find out what's the problem. But the problem is that we don't see that it's actually all Krishna. We think it's something separate from Krishna. Right? So that's what's being brought out in this point. That's the foundation. So in other words, that is something that we're familiar with, or you know, generally are quite familiar with, and at the same time, that will be the conclusion. Right? But now in this, the process will be as we'll go into this in more depth, so that we see the technical reasons why we don't make this connection. Right? Because otherwise, we're saying this is what it is, and it's correct. Right? And in our mind, our intelligence understands this. But the difficulty then comes is that we're not making that nice analytical procedure that allows us to realize that. Right? Somehow or another, our practice and our contemplation is not giving rise to realization. Right? Because we're not making it actually practical. Does that make sense? If I want to get realization by doing something practical, I actually have to do it. But if I want to get the realization of riding a bicycle, I actually have to, you know, have the bicycle, understand its workings, and actually practice riding it. Right? To say that, you know, riding a bicycle is this or that, that's good. Right? It's a beginning. But it's not actually, you know, what's going on. Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. So then here is just so in conclusion here, then there's this verse. Okay. Yeah. So in this last quote, if you're having the book, then this is on 18 of the introduction. Bottom. So this is here in Bhagavatam, okay, Canto 3, Chapter 26, verses 23 to 24. Quote, "Not only must one come to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness, but one must also be very careful. Any inattentiveness or carelessness may cause fall down. This fall down is due to false ego. From the status of pure consciousness, the false ego is born because of misuse of independence. We cannot argue about why false ego arises from pure consciousness. Factually, there is always the chance that this will happen, and therefore, one has to be very careful. False ego is the basic principle for all material activities, which are executed in the modes of pure nature. As soon as one deviates from pure Krishna consciousness, he increases his entanglement in material reaction. The entanglement of materialism is the material mind, and from this material mind, the senses and material organs become manifest." So this is the connecting point here, this last sentence. "That the entanglement of materialism is the material mind, and from this material mind, the senses and material organs become manifest." So this is then where the impersonalist will bring up the point of the illusion, that it doesn't actually exist because the material mind is creating it. So therefore, if we get rid of this concept, then it all goes away. It sounds very nice, you know, from the angle that, okay, material is one thing, therefore spiritual is something completely different. So it sounds very logical. So on one level, yes. But on another level, the point is how it was there in the first place. How would it function? Just to say it happened there still means you're not understanding it. And saying that I'm in control of it, that I will get rid of it and therefore liberate myself, still is illusory in that how are you in control of it? Because if you're in control of it to make it go away, how did it get control of you in the first place? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, there is some mechanics here that is completely being neglected by the impersonalist. Right? And because this is, you could possibly say, the most prominent of all spiritual systems, you know, in the material platform, is this impersonalism. Therefore, one has to be very careful to not also be caught up in it. Right? Does that make sense? Because basically you could say all systems except for proper, you know, Vaishnavism are impersonalism. Right? And then seemingly very different is Buddhism. Right? But it's also just another form, just, you know, they don't, you know, it's instead of having all Brahman, it's just all nothing. Right? Does that make sense? So in here then, okay. Then, so that will be the connection. That will be our next point. But just on one thing that came up here, it was interesting. From the status of pure consciousness, the false ego is born because of misuse of independence. We cannot argue about why false ego arises from pure consciousness. So, therefore, it arises. Right? There's this idea that how from pure consciousness can it arise? If you're pure, it can't arise. But Prabhupada's making the point, it can't be argued. Because it's the nature of this jiva being independent that it can arise. So it's not something you can say, well, if it's pure, it can't have that. No, you can have pure water, but it can go bad. Right? It's the nature. Right? So therefore, we're trying to point out is that the pure consciousness is the natural position. Contaminated consciousness is not the natural position, but it's a, how you say, it is a condition that is not out of the ordinary for the jiva being in the tathasta position. Yes?
Maharaj, at this point, it would be proper to deeply analyze since the position of the jiva is the eternal servant of the Lord, and actually this particular position of tathasta has an end to it?
Has an end. It doesn't have an end. It has its
transformation,
but it's also a matter. It's just like you have the freedom at any time, you know, to take this rock and swallow it. But you may never do it. You know, you just don't take the option. So therefore, one is as good. The tathasta, having taken that transcendental position, therefore is as good as internal potency. But that's why the example is given of iron and fire. It's iron. But because of its being taken that voluntary position of being in the fire, it actually acts exactly the same as fire. So one on the platform of rasa makes no distinction.
Yes, but I'm trying to analyze it from my level in the three-dimensional aspect of how the jiva technically is described as part of the antaranga shakti, internal potency, to the free will to decide rather than rock or not.
But still, it's their free will. They get it, they go away from Krishna, it's the free will that they get involved in Krishna.
Right.
So the free will always remains, just that it's natural that one will take the natural position.
What I'm trying to focus is from this side, let's say, because you were focusing very nice analysis on the very distinction of what is impersonal and what is personal.
Okay.
So even in this position, which technically also is described as belonging to Brahman, because in the Paramada or Paramanavada, the manifestation of the jiva is Brahman.
Yes.
So as Brahman, what is the percentage of this influence which actually will make me ultimately feel that I, or let's say, when the jiva enters into really leaving aside, because you say we are devotees, we have to be careful, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very much, we have to be attentive. But actually, to which degree we are devotees of so long, you know, associated with the Vaishnavas, initiated, and all, but actually we are continuing
Means your difference here is that the tatastha means is that you have the difference whether one is looking from the material perspective of I and mind, or that the true perspective that we are servant of Krishna and we belong to Krishna, Krishna belongs to us. In other words, the direct connection between Krishna and the living entity, like that. Well, that is there. It's more as the, from the angle of the living entity in Krishna. Because Krishna is not a problem. He doesn't have a problem here. So, the, how do you say, means this, I would say, is that this will come up as we go, you know, for a very deep understanding. But the essential point here is that the actual point is that connection to Krishna is actually what makes everything correct itself and put itself in the proper position. And that is done, I think it's by the next quote we will see, is that it's by the grace of the spiritual masters, by the grace of the devotees, because in here the soul is on the Brahman platform, and that's its natural state, but depending upon the illusion that is there, then he can even not understand he's on that platform. So he doesn't. He thinks he is matter. But even he brings himself to the point of understanding he's not matter, he is observer of matter, kshetrajna, right? That he is observing everything that's going on around him. Then still, that is not the natural level of Krishna consciousness. It's the beginning level. It's important, but once he understands that that Brahman is Krishna, that's then it becomes serious. But still, seeing Krishna as Brahman or Paramatma, which is very important to get us out of the material contamination, but that's as far as this usefulness is. The real point is coming to the understanding of relationship with the Lord on the Bhagavan platform, because that's actually spiritual. Right? That's eternal spiritual. The others are actually temporary spiritual. Just as we see is in the absolute sense, when we, or not say in the absolute sense, in the most, not broad, most specific sense, if we're defining devotion or prema, that technically it only starts at the position of prema. And before that, bhava bhakti and sadhana bhakti technically are not prema, are not devotion. But they are aspiration for that devotion. Because that aspiration is taken as non-different, from devotion. So therefore we count it as, we call it devotional service. But technically it's not. It is practice of devotional service. And then, you know, it's just like the kid when he first gets on the bicycle and falls over, we don't actually call it riding a bicycle. But if you ask, well, what's the boy doing? We'll say he's riding a bicycle. You know, but real riding a bicycle is when he doesn't fall off. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So in the same way is that the process of bringing one from illusion to the platform of pure love of Godhead, that whole process then is important, but it's once one gets to the platform of pure love of Godhead that it actually is called devotion.
In all these stages, still the jiva is praying not to fall.
Yes, that's why Prabhupada is making the point is due to false ego. Here, that is the cause of inattentiveness or carelessness may cause fall down. And this is due to false ego that we actually think I'm the controller and enjoyer. We revert back to that I and mine, you know, of the mundane. So I think at this point, because that's a whole nother discussion, the element of the soul and its coming in. So this is more focused on the technicality of how the mind is working. So then we'll move forward. It'll also make this much more clear. Right, because this was Maharaj's introduction, so it wasn't giving all the answers. It was giving the how you say the foundation or the framework like for this. So now he brings it to this next point, which Prabhupada mentioned here, which is the key. The entanglement of materialism is the material mind, and from this material mind, the senses and material organs become manifest. So now his next topic in chapter 1 is then the relationship between the mind and the senses, right? Sense objects. So, and the attachment that comes from that. Right? So that's now the actual technical problem. Right? So, we see here is that he's bringing up something that will come up like that. It means in the philosophical point, it's a side thing. But it's a point is being brought up here is that the living entity can, with the mind, know one thing but do another. Right? So that's a very important point. So here he uses the term conflicted mind. Right? Because the mind is conflicted. It wants to do this, but it knows it should do that. Right? So it keeps both in one place at one time. Right? But this particular form of achinta beta beta tattva is not very successful. Right? Because it's not actually in knowledge, it's in ignorance. So this conflicted state in ignorance then gives a lot of trouble. And that's actually why this whole process is taken up, because of the conflicted mind. Right? So the devotee is dealing, therefore, with this conflicted element of trying to actually do the right thing in Krishna consciousness, but at the same time, by habit, you know, not doing like that. So this then is brought up. So here, this is brought out from a question of Uddhava to Krishna in Bhagavatam 11.13.8. So then Uddhava says, "My dear Krishna, generally human beings know that material life brings great future unhappiness. And still they try to enjoy material life. My dear Lord, how can one in knowledge act just like a dog, an ass, or a goat?" Like that. So now here is Uddhava discussing with the Lord, how is it that the human being on the path of progression can still do this? Right? It's very important, because we have this idea that actually if you're spiritual, you can't have any of this. Right? And so this is a very, very simplistic religious concept. Right? It's important to note that if we get to the actual platform of prema, you won't have any of this. Generally speaking, yeah. On the gross platforms, we know it. Once you get to bhava, you won't see any of this. Right? But it does go on until that point. So that's very important to note, because I have heard it said that some say that, you know, devotees before, very advanced, associated with Prabhupada, did so much service, you know, service that we can't even dream of doing, made so many thousands of devotees, inspired them in all this, and then when they somehow or another became distracted from Krishna consciousness, went away, devotees would have the point, make the point, well, they were never devotees in the first place. Right? So this kind of understanding is very far from the mark. If you're taking Vishwanath's point is that you're a devotee when you come to prema, yes, then that's true. But if we're taking it that this process is that of someone who's committed to it is therefore a devotee, to say that from that context, which is how probably everybody takes it, as opposed to possibly how the person who originally made the statement. What they were making the statement was, they were not on the level of prema. They were on a level lower than that. Therefore, they could fall down, like Bharat Maharaj. He was on the level of bhava. He could fall from there. But on prema, you don't fall. That was the statement made. But it was taken that they were never devotees, or were pseudo devotees, and previous to that statement and that thing, people will make mistakes, it's understood. After that, it's this puritanical thing that if you make any mistake, then you're to be thrown out, right? Just like nobody cares for the moon, right? Because it's got spots on it. So therefore, you know, it's been removed from all concepts of romance, of beauty, or any other, you know, things of aesthetics because of those things, right? Isn't that the platform now? Yeah? You agree with it? Okay. Like that. He's from Alaska. So, therefore, this is very detrimental, because Uddhava is pointing out that this is going on 5,000 years ago, that the spiritual person who is making this endeavor to come to perfection and come to the platform of prema is still in this conflicted position. Right? And he uses this word anyonya, which means anya, means other. Means, you know, it's basically you're having two things happening, contradictory things happening at once. So that's where you see this discussed. So this is a natural point of the philosophical thing. So basically that's the main point of now this chapter, is to discuss this confliction. So now, he there, then in this, then, okay, brings out Krishna then to answer this question. Then he brings out a discussion between the Kumaras and Lord Brahma. And so in verse 17, then he brings out this point, this anyonya, of how this conflicted position comes up. So then the sages headed by Shonaka said, O Lord, people's minds are naturally attracted to material sense objects. And similarly, the sense objects in the form of desire enter within the mind. Therefore, how can a person who desires liberation, who desires to cross over activities of sense gratification, destroy this mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind? Please explain this to us. So, here is, now this is the technical point. This is now where you can say we're dealing with the, you know, the very clear subject of analyzing the mind. Here is that the mind is attracted to the sense objects, and the sense objects enter the mind. So this relationship, this is actually where the problem lies. Does this make sense? So the mind means the mind is thinking about these sense objects, and these sense objects all enter the mind. So there's a non-difference. So the question here is, how do you separate that? How can you actually separate between these two? Because if you can't separate them, you remain in material consciousness. Right? You can separate them, then you can move through with this. So this was a bit of a problem. So they asked this to Lord Brahma. And unfortunately, Brahma himself had no answer. Right? So then this was answered by the Hamsa avatar. So he prayed to the Lord, and he actually answered this. Where is that? Okay. So, in other words, what we're dealing with here very clearly is that we have to go back here. This is going to be very important. Is these four aspects that we always discuss in the Lord's personality. The presentation of Shankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudeva. And as we've discussed in previous time, is Shankarshan is the Lord of the field. And from this, then we establish everything that's there, all the elements of a field. Right? Means taking that this field is the environment in which you will function. Right? You will interact with others, whatever it is that you're interacting with, and all the elements connected with it, including the body, the mind, all these things, that's the field. Right? So then Prajumna means that there's an attraction to that field to act in a particular way. So this is actually where the point comes in, is that then from that, then contemplating that, then you're going to get attached, right? That brings you to Aniruddha, right? Because before we mentioned, the attachment is actually where things are happening. The mind is actually there. The other is rising up, but the main seat of the mind is attachment. Attachment repulsion, right? Not the particular desire. There's an attachment, therefore there's action. A repulsion, therefore there's action. Desire, there's still no action. Right, so you can say the pure manifestation is attachment, not desire. Right? Does that make sense? So then that means the key to this, means is then his twofold is that dealing with desire is where you can actually cut it off, because from desire comes attachment. Right? So for the point of attachment, I mean desire, you can actually deal with it. It doesn't come to the point of attachment. At the same time, is, as previously mentioned, that Aniruddha, as the lord of the mind, if one connects the attachment there to him, then that also takes care of everything. But that's actually the point. In other words, the point being done on Sambandha is how one gets oneself out of the material nature. And the point on Prayojana, connecting to the Lord, that's what gets you into this, into the spiritual nature. Does that make sense? So this... Oh, yes.
So the Puritan, his attachment to an artificial level of purity and religiosity is what's clouding his judgment to to what is actually going on.
Yes, because they're attached to the idea. So this is what's going to come up now. This gives rise to the point is that is what is good and what's bad. Because the whole point is the mind is perceiving things. That's where it says the mind enters into the sense objects. The mind goes and sees what's there. But now, that's not a problem. Because senses, sense objects, and the mind interacting with each other is the natural position. That's what they do. Right? So whether on the material or the spiritual platform, that's what the mind does. So that's not actually the problem. The problem is then the definition of what's good and not good. How do you define good and not good? So this is where the in psychology and all that, that this is where they start going unhinged. Because this is where they can't make the distinctions. Because they can't how do you define? Because we'll smell, like here, it's like, you know, we'll see, oh, the smoke is going. And then we'll say, you know, so this is nice, right? Because then we know that it's there, mosquitoes won't be there, it also warms the air, you know, so many nice things. Someone else comes in and goes, oh no, the smoke. You know, because he can't breathe, he can't see, you know, this, that, so many things. So, what's right, what's wrong here? So, the good and the bad has been generated from the mind. Therefore, you get this difference of opinion. Right? So, this is the problem, is that the in this case, the Puritan or the religionist or the moralist, they have, where has this concept of good and bad been generated from? Right? And if you ask this question, they'll just, of course, say, oh, Krishna, this and that. But if you ask them specifically, okay, show the path of that. You know, let's see all the little headers off your email. They can't give it at all. Zero. And then they'll just go into, well, you know, everybody knows that, you know, these kind of smoke screens. But in actuality, it's come from their own mind. They may have picked it up from association with others, their parents, other religionists, other moralists, and so therefore it's just a common thing in their circle that this behavior is good and another behavior is bad, right? The Christians say they're, you know, good, and anybody who's not Christian is a savage. Like that. So they've decided this. But who decided that? Right? Did God decide that? Who decided that? They themselves. It's their own interpretation of religion. But because it's very popular, you know, you might have millions of people thinking, therefore they think this is correct. Does this make sense? So this is the point at which now it gets there. As the mind enters into these things, it can see them and interact with them. In the way of sense and sense object, you know, the sense object and the sense itself, right? The tanmatras. So that's there. So the mind and these 15 things, that's called, you know, the 16 elements. Sometimes creation is just described as that, the 16. It just means the mind and, you know, the senses. Right, senses, sense objects, and the tanmatras, the sense itself. So then, how do you say? Now the problem comes is then when it decides good and bad, that's when then the sense object enters the mind. Then one is implicated because one goes, this is good, or bad, that's when then the sense object has become part of the mind's, interaction. It's attachment, right? Because if there's no attraction, no attachment, you have no opinion on it. You know what I'm saying? You just don't have an opinion. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So you can walk by something and see it. So this explains how Sukadeva Goswami, as a Brahmavadi, could walk by these, undressed girls bathing, who are not even bothering to cover themselves up. And his senses, the mind, the senses can be interacting, and he can see that that's there. But he's not making that this is good or not good. It's just Brahman. Therefore, there's no interest. So he keeps walking. Right? But Vyasadeva, because he's making these distinctions of good and not good, therefore, when he sees this, then he actually he stops and he's discriminated between the girls and the trees, because he ran by the trees also. Right? But he didn't stop and ask the trees. He stopped and asked the girl, says, why did you make a distinction between him? He's young, he's beautiful, he's naked, and he's running right by you, and you're all standing there with folded hands, completely exposed. And then when I come, I'm an old guy, matted hair and looking really disgusting, and you're covering up. How is that? And they said, because you make distinctions and he didn't. Right. So this is what is the, also just in that purport pointed out, this is what is called, this is the sixth sense that Prabhupada attributes to the feminine nature. That they can perceive when you've decided something is good or not good. The interaction of the mind with the senses, sense objects, that's not the problem. It's when you decide it's good or not, that's when it's noticed. So that's why the women can see what's a good brahmachari or what's not, because they can see this interaction. Right? That makes sense? So this is then the question that actually comes up, that is the struggle actually, is this point, is how, so the Kumara's point is how do we separate these two? Because the sense has entered the sense objects, and the sense object entered the mind. The mind has entered the sense objects have entered the mind. How to separate these? Because if they're separated, there's no problem. But if they're together, that's a problem. Right? That's the real crux of material life. Is that the mind has entered the sense objects have entered the mind. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Is that still not... question has been answered.
You were saying about the... somebody might argue that in the religious scriptures it is very clearly defined.
That's in the religious scriptures. So let the devotees say, because it says in the Bible here that that's good or bad, and therefore we can discuss it, because then we're talking religion, not their opinion. But they won't say that.
But they could.
They could. And then we have a start. At least then we have some religious discussion. But we don't even get that. It's simply, well, everybody knows, or it's politically correct, or it's right, or it's good, or anything, but actually a basis in authority. So if you give it back to there, then you can start talking. Because that gives rise to who gave the scripture. God gave it. So therefore it's good or bad because God said, not because you feel like it. So at the same time, God is also having this discussion with Uddhava. How is it that the spiritualist can also have a problem or fall down? It doesn't make him any less spiritual. It just means he was not careful enough. That's God's opinion. Then one cannot get out your pitchforks and torches and you're burning at the stake and your little white hooded hats and all those kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? You can't do that, even though that's the next natural step. You can't, because if you actually acknowledge that it is based on religion, religions come from God, God doesn't work that way. So therefore, if you are actually following God, you can't work that way. So if you want to work that way, you actually have to leave God out of the equation. Therefore, it's mundane.
So the Puritan approach is quite simplistic. and that's why it falls flat.
Yes.
But on the other hand...
Popular, yes. Very emotional, gets the bile moving, yes. You know, helps digestion, you know, many, many side benefits.
Gets you going,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the argument from our conditioned state that because we are conditioned, mm-hmm. therefore, don't blame us. We're conditioned.
Yeah.
Also
but
seems to be...
It's also false.
Lame, you know, it's also false.
It's false because you're saying, I'm conditioned. But who's the I? You know, what is this conditioning? So therefore, it's also stupid. Because here he mentions, Uddhava doesn't say that, how is it that some, you know, the transcendentalist... Then he has these, you know, gets involved, even though he doesn't want to be involved, he gets involved, and he doesn't leave him on a nice position. He says, how is it that the transcendentalist acts like a dog, an ass, or a goat? So therefore, if you're saying, I'm conditioned, and therefore, give me a break, that's like, you know, it's how you say, then you have to admit that, you know, I'm a dog, a goat, or an ass, so therefore, you know, give me a break based on that. But they want to be able to maintain out of false ego. The reason the one's in the position is their pristine position is, you know, very advanced or special or unique or something. And that's what contradictory and that's what doesn't work. So therefore the solution is that both positions are wrong. That both positions exist, that's natural. That's what Prabhupada says. We can't argue that they're there. It's natural. But the point is that what is the real position? That's what we're trying to get to. Right? So that's then what then the Hamsavatar then replies. So now this is in Srimad Bhagavatam 11, 13, 24, and 25. So then verse 24 is, within this world, whatever is perceived by the mind, speech, eyes, or other senses is me alone. And nothing besides me. All of you, please understand this by a straightforward analysis of the facts. Right? This is okay. And then the next verse. My dear sons, the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects. And similarly, the sense objects enter into the mind. But both this material mind and the sense objects are merely designations that cover the spirit soul who is part and parcel of me. So that means, so in other words, the first one throws out, you know, the purist. And the second one throws out the, you know, rationalist. You know, it's like that. Just, you know, what's the big deal? So in the first one we see here, is whatever is perceived by the mind, speech, eyes, or other senses. Krishna says, is me alone. Doesn't it's not like he's saying, oh, I am this, I am that. No, it's all it is me, and nothing else. He makes that very clear. Nothing besides me. So anything one's perceiving is Krishna. That's all it is. So that's the problem is. And so this then, for the purist, he can't actually deal with that. So they take the atheistic position. What they do is therefore then they try to put God in a very special position. Right? That gives rise to this deism. Is that, oh, they take the part that he is above material nature, but they don't take the part that he's created it and makes it work through his energies. So if he does that, that means all there is God. That means anything that you're seeing dealing with, no matter what it is, it's Krishna. No matter how nice it is or how, you know, disgusting it is, it's still Krishna. But the point is because of our sense of good and bad, our sense of religion, therefore we separate out of all these experiences that are Krishna, we take out the nice ones, right? And then say that's pious, and we take the ones of those that are connected, well, obviously to Krishna, and call that devotional, right? And that way we stay away from all the, you know, kind of, you know, how you say, the gross stuff. Does that make sense? But in actuality, it's all Krishna. But the point is Rupa Goswami says, just because it's connected to Krishna doesn't make it devotion. Right? Kamsa was thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day, but it wasn't devotion. So therefore, it must be favorable. So you're seeing the sense, and the sense of all this is Krishna, and this is what you're attached to. It's non-different from Krishna. So actually, you're not actually attached to that sense object or that experience that comes. You're attached to Krishna, because that's what it is. But because it's your attachment and it's on your terms, therefore technically it's not favorable to Krishna. That's why it's given up. Not because that activity is somehow or another, you know, not nice. What's not nice about it is it's not favorable to Krishna. Not because it's a religious thing or a moral thing. That's why we can take morality and religion and say they're not still not to the actual point. But you have to know what is religion and morality to be able to do that. Someone who can't identify it can't throw it out. The Goswamis can identify it, they can throw it out. Someone who can't identify it has to work with it. But he has to work with it according to how Krishna says. Then it becomes favorable. Right? So this is a very... Do we catch what's going on here? Right? The mechanics of what actually is how the mind is getting attached and what's the real point that's there? Yes.
In modern parenting philosophy, they say that you should never tell the child they're good or bad. I was thinking in Krishna consciousness, because we have this understanding of what is good and bad because it's based on scriptures, and that's completely bogus.
But then they're saying it's good to never tell them what's good or bad. You know what I'm saying? So it's speculative. The point is it's just like you give an example. Prabhupada, if a devotee was behaving in a very, you know, improper way, he would say you're behaving like a Shudra. He would never say you are a Shudra. You wouldn't say you are good or you are bad. No, because it's not that. You are who you are. It's the action is good or the action is bad. You know? So you say, a good person wouldn't do that, or a devotee wouldn't do that. You're not saying you're not a devotee for doing that. This is the mistake. So that's what's being made there, is that this line between, distinguishing this I and mine is so entrenched that if somebody does something, then it's immediately, you know, they're identified with it. But that's why even these Malecha scriptures are saying, don't hate the sinner, hate the sin. Right? Because they're trying to bring you from this gross platform, or simplistically gross platform of religion and that, to an actual working one. Because if you hate the sinner, how are you going to ever have a relationship? How will anybody be saved? You know, that would be like being in a prison and you hate the prisoners. There's no way you can give anyone benefit, because that's all there is. There isn't anybody else. You know, like that. So that's the difficulty. They're slowly splitting these things. So it appears to be hair splitting, but the point is this is the point that keeps you here or not here. It's that simple. It's like that. Is you see everything is connected to Krishna. Right? So then, oh, everything's connected to Krishna, so my attachments and that are all Krishna, so it's great. But then the next point is, my dear sons, the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the material sense objects. And similarly, the sense objects enter into the mind. Right? But both this material mind and the sense object are merely designations that cover the spirit soul as part and parcel of me. So, maintaining that, you're still in illusion. Even though you're saying, oh, it's Krishna and that's all, it's all the great, so therefore I can do whatever I want, but still you're an illusion. And the point is not to just see Krishna, the point is to have devotion to Krishna. That means you have to be out of illusion. So therefore, justifying your own nonsense does not make you more Krishna conscious. Even though you may be identifying Krishna within it. It's just like Kamsa knows that's Krishna. Dhanakasura knows that's Krishna, right? Dhanakasura kicked Balaram in the chest, right? So that means he had to be able to tell the difference between Balaram and one of the other coward boys and a tree. Right? But it didn't make him Krishna conscious. Right? So this is where that Brahman level that we were discussing, you know, for what, like a year in the second canto, has its use and its limit. Its use is identifying everything as Krishna. but therefore progressively moving towards Krishna, not identify it and then let it sit, you know, status quo. No, identify as Krishna, therefore you're moving towards Krishna, and you're leaving that understanding, because you've identified as Brahman, that's now you're more properly situated in knowledge, but it doesn't mean you're in devotion. Right? It's a step from ignorance to knowledge, knowledge to devotion. Right? Because in ignorance, how are you going to have devotion? Because you can't distinguish. So you have to distinguish. Right? You're unconscious, so you have to become... the conflicted mind. So you thought you were having a bad day. Okay, so is this clear on this point? So this is the full range. Basically, now it'll just be further breaking down and things of this. But this is actually the whole thing in a nutshell. Is that the mind is perceiving things, that's not the problem. But when it decides this is good or bad, and that's not based on its favorableness to Krishna, then that's the mundane mind, and is entered by the mundane sense objects. And it keeps you in mundane consciousness. You perceive everything, you see it in relationship to Krishna, you see what is best, the same, good and bad. But what's good for Krishna? What am I going to do with these sense objects for Krishna? Then you're on the transcendental platform. Then you're situated in devotion. Right? Because then even though the senses and sense objects actually enter each other, but it's not mundane mind and mundane senses. Right? It's the spiritual mind and Brahman, which is spiritual. But here it's inferior Brahman, and the spiritual world is superior Brahman. Does that make sense? Very, very simple. Like that. Basically, time's up, so that was just a conclusion. We'll continue Monday, like that. Does that make sense? Right. So that is basically what we're dealing with here. That's the technicality. This is the aspect of the mind that makes the Vedanta philosophy unique, because there is no other system that can explain this. Nobody else can. You can get the biggest, topmost psychologists, other forms of religion or philosophy, no one can explain to this detail. That's all. And because of that, that's why nobody actually gets out of the material world like that.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Savaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
Because what's entered is a false ego.